Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Follow the Lead podcast, a Christian leaders podcast where we work with faith-driven executives and entrepreneurs to help them seal their identity in Christ, release control, and embrace peace. Brought to you by Greg Fay Insurance. If you haven't checked out Greg yet, do so today, gregfayinsurance.com. Friends, today on the podcast, nonprofit leader extraordinaire, Chris Lambert. Chris talks about the work that he's doing in Detroit, why it matters, and how you can lean in to organizational health. Chris has established a program for nonprofit leaders to help build in some systems for success. This was such a great conversation with a pastor and someone who just is so driven. You're going to love Chris's energy. And if you do, do me a favor, share this episode with a friend, maybe somebody who you know that can benefit from a little intentional structure. So now, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Chris Lambert. Chris, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Tony, man, it's a privilege and a pleasure.
We were talking beforehand and I thought, man, if I don't hit record soon, I don't know, we're going to miss out on all the good stuff. And so you've done so many things in your life. I kind of always like to start in the macro. How would you describe the calling that God has placed on your life?
Well, I like to just start with who I am, right? I am a son of the Father, follower of Jesus, warrior of love, filled with the Spirit. I guess is the way I try to describe my identity to my sons. I'm a father. My wife and I have been married 20 years this July.
Let's go.
And we have two boys who are 14 and 11 and wild and crazy in all the right ways, or at least for the most part. And I am a founder CEO of a nonprofit that does revitalization in the city of Detroit. I'm also an author of Next Level Nonprofit, which is an organizational operating system for nonprofits that's significantly making impact in the nonprofit sector. And yeah, I'll just stop there for now.
You know, one of the things that I was reading as I was doing a little research on you is that you kind of had a spiritual awakening while you were at Indiana University. I was wondering if you could kind of share a little bit about the impact that that had on your life and how it kind of propelled you to where you are today.
Yeah, I'll give a little more context to kind of start just before Indiana University. So I was born and raised in a very small town in northern Indiana. And when I say small town, I mean, we didn't have a four-way stoplight until I was in middle school. And when it came to church, religion, spirituality, my parents would take my sister and I to church service about once a month because they felt like it was the right thing to do. But I don't ever recall them talking about God in the home. For whatever reason, though, I was this really spiritual kid. In particular, I loved the person of Jesus so much so that at eighth grade, other kids in school gave me kind of an informal nickname of Lambert, the Jesus freak, because I was trying to lead everybody to Christianity, and I wasn't very successful at it.
Wow.
But then shortly before I turned 16, I hit a bit of a growth spurt, and I became kind of a big fish in a small pond at my high school. Now, my high school was fairly large because three different cities all went to the same school, but I started looking around at my buddies who were not following God, and I came to the conclusion that they were having a lot more fun in life than me and my youth group. And so I said, goodbye, Jesus. And really, if I'm being 100, I gave him the middle finger and I said, I want nothing to do with you. This, I don't even believe this. You know, this is a waste of my time. And so for the next 6 years of my life, from the ages of 16 to 22, I basically did whatever I wanted to do, whatever I thought was going to make me the most happy. And what that meant for me at those ages, you know, was drugs, alcohol, girls, and parties, and trying to make a little money on the side, sports in high school. But then that came to an end when I graduated high school and I went to Indiana University. I was studying business. My plan was to go to law school and become a real estate developer, because in my mind, that was a great way to make the kind of money that I thought that I wanted to fund the lifestyle that I thought mattered to me most. And I joined what at the time was the largest fraternity on campus, so I could have more of all those above experiences that I mentioned earlier that I was looking for. By the way, just a side note, 2 years after I graduated IU, that fraternity got kicked off for cocaine and guns. And so it was an interesting place, right?
Wow.
And, you know, I was living it up, doing my thing, having a lot of fun. But then there'd be nights when I'd lie in bed and I'd think to myself, wow, this really isn't doing for me what I thought it would. Like the highs are fun, but the lows are pretty low and I don't feel satisfied, right? And so my solution to my perceived problem was really just to double down on all those activities I just mentioned. Not the most intelligent choice, right? But my junior year of college, I decided to move to Australia for 6 months to study. There wasn't a lot of studying going on in Australia. While I was there, I experienced what I would call a radical encounter with God that changed the entire trajectory of my life. So a couple things happened that led to that experience. I was traveling around in Southeast Asia, the Pacific Rim, and of course, Australia. And I began to realize the world was a very big place. It did not revolve around me and my 22-year-old ego, which was an important lesson.
Wow.
I also met a couple guys over there who became my closest friends, and they happened to be Jesus followers. But they were pretty fun guys. They could go out to a bar, have a few drinks, go home. Meanwhile, I'd stay out doing the things they weren't doing. And they kept trying to convince me to go to their church service. And I was like, dude, no way. And I used a number of words to describe, you know, how that wasn't going to happen. And they just wouldn't stop, right? And so eventually I said, whatever, fine, I'll go. And we went to this little Anglican church where the pastor wore skateboarding shoes and skateboarding shorts. I thought that was kind of strange. But, you know, it was okay. For some reason, I decided to go back a second time, and I ended up going a third time. And the third time I went, this pastor gets on the stage. He tells this story that in many ways outlined major themes of my life journey and some of the stuff I literally just told you here on this show. And as he was wrapping it up, I experienced hearing God speak to me for the first time in my life.
Mm.
Now, some of our listeners are going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Some of our listeners are going to think I'm certifiably crazy. And I can assure you, I'm close to certifiably crazy, but the right kind of crazy. But anyway, what I heard God say to me was that I was like lukewarm water. I wasn't hot or cold, and he was about to spit me out of his mouth.
Wow.
So for our listeners unfamiliar with this, this is literally something God said 2,000 years ago to a specific church. It's in the very last book of the New Testament, in the book of Revelation. That wasn't something the pastor said that day in church, and that wasn't something we read in the Bible that day. I know I read that at some point when I was a kid, but what that did for me is it spiritually sobered me for the next few seconds. I wasn't on any drugs or alcohol this particular moment, but I would say if there was ever a time in my life that I was spiritually sober, it was then. And it was almost as if visually I saw this highlight reel, or really more appropriately, a low light reel of the last 6 years of my life, it kind of playing back. And I realized that God basically let me do everything that I wanted to do. I pretty much got everything that I wanted. He didn't get in my way. He didn't mess up my plans. He didn't send me to jail, which I should have been for drunk driving or drug use, certainly. I was a drug dealer for a very, very, very short period of time. I wasn't very good at it. He didn't get in my way, and I got what I wanted, and then it hit me. At no point during those 6 years had I ever been as happy or as satisfied as I was when I was Lambert the Jesus Freak.
Wow.
And it was like, that was the whole reason for this journey. So this pastor gives one of those come to the front deals, you know, what some people call an altar call. And I remember exactly what I did. I went to the front. I got down on my knees. I looked up and I said, God, from this moment forward, I'm going to stop doing whatever you want me to stop doing. I'm going to start doing whatever you want me to start doing. By faith in you, Jesus, amen. So I stopped immediately using illegal drugs and getting wasted. I still like some bourbon, you know, every now and then in a cigar.
For sure.
But what started happening in my life was a lot more powerful than what stopped happening. So prior to this experience, I loved my family, my friends, the girl that I thought I was going to marry at the time, but I couldn't have cared less about the world outside of my little bubble. I wasn't a bully, but I was paying no attention, right? Immediately after this experience, and continuing on to this day, I'm 43 years of age now, and this was in 2002. I began to have this really deep sense of curiosity. When I would meet people, I'd want to connect with them and find out who they were, what they're passionate about, what's going on in their life. Is there anything maybe they're struggling with? How can I help? So I come back to Indiana University for my senior year. Shortly before I left IU, there wasn't a single Jesus follower or Christian in this entire fraternity of 180 guys. Before I got back, now this had nothing to do with me. My three best friends in the fraternity also had their own crazy encounters with Jesus.
Wow.
So they're all Jesus followers now. Plus my drug dealer, who was an atheist before I left. So we got this Bible study going in the frat. Long story short, we started leading all these dudes to Jesus. After about a month, we had 12 to 15 guys coming every week. I started thinking about my future. I realized I don't want to go to law school anymore and become a real estate developer because I don't care about that quest for money anymore. I just want to help people connect with God. So I moved out to LA, studied seminary, met the woman who became my wife. And then I'll pause there because you probably have questions or you probably want to take this somewhere else.
Well, it's so huge. And one of the things that I always like to ask people, so in that moment where you heard the audible voice or like that inner voice of God. Okay, right?
I do want to clarify. Yeah, not audible.
Yeah.
But it was more clear than anything I'd ever heard another person say.
Well, I mean, you've made some pretty bold moves. I'm kind of curious. Like, how do you discern God's voice in your life today?
One of the things I've come to believe is, just to use an analogy maybe we can all relate to, like, no matter where we are right now, no matter where we're listening to this podcast, there are radio frequencies moving through our room, through literally our body, playing every kind of music we can imagine. Everything on the internet is flowing, literally, you know, transmitting through Wi-Fi signals right through our bodies, right in our rooms. And we can tune in to all of those signals if we have the right device. If you turn it to the right radio station, you have a good Wi-Fi connection, you'll go to the right website, whatever. But all those signals are already taking place around us constantly. And I've come to believe that that is a great analogy for how God is at work in this world. I really believe that he's speaking regularly to really everybody on the planet in some way, shape, or form. And the key I've come to learn or come to believe is calibrating our hearts to that frequency of listening to what God is saying. And so for me, kind of the big keys are, one, actually just believing that he is speaking to me. Because I think I find what I'm looking for in life, right? And I definitely don't believe that I'm believing in a psychological crutch that just, you know, makes me feel good. Like, if this wasn't true, I wouldn't want to believe it, right? But I do find that when I look for God, I do find him. And that is actually something he told us that he would do, right? And I also found that the more I put into practice what he's saying, the more I hear him more frequently. And the more I think he speaks to me and to us. And I think that's true in life. Like, anyone that we're working with that we find that's really gravitating toward what we're saying, we're more likely to, you know, press in and lean in and go deeper. And so those are the biggest factors for me. But certainly, you know, I compare anything that I think that I'm hearing from God to scripture. I take it before my wife, my mentors, my friends, the people that I trust and in community. And then I'm looking for, you know, God at work to either confirm or deny or redirect what I think that he's saying to me.
That's really good. I think I like the balance of both the spiritual searching and the community part of it. Now, in 2010, you took a big leap of faith and started this nonprofit, Life Remodeled. I was kind of hoping that you might share with us the genesis story of how this community and life-changing nonprofit really got off the ground.
So after that experience that I told you about in college, my sense of calling was that I was going to be a pastor for the rest of my life. And my wife and I moved to the Detroit area in 2007 to start a church. Before we did that, we moved to Africa for 9 months. 7 of those 9 months, we lived in Liberia. I lived in a mud hut in a Muslim village with no running water. And that's where I learned community development. That experience in Africa radically reframed my understanding of the person of Jesus, which led to the creation of Life Remodeled. And it became very clear to me as I was living with people who were very marginalized and oppressed, and I started rereading the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all of a sudden it hit me that Jesus spent the majority of his 3 years of ministry with the people who were the most marginalized and oppressed. The prostitutes, the drunks, the lepers, the outcasts, and so on and so forth. And he was trying to get his disciples to do the same thing, and they really didn't want to do that, right? And I really came to believe, as I read throughout the entire Bible, God's passion for people who are suffering and marginalized and oppressed. And so when we started this church in 07, we very much had that mindset of wanting to be a ministry that was reaching people who were experiencing life-controlling challenges and so on and so forth. And we did that. But in 2010, I got this vision for Life Remodeled. And my original understanding was that I was just going to get this thing started, and then I was going to find somebody else to run it, and I would go back into pastoring. But Life Remodeled began to grow so rapidly, and I began to realize this is really what I'm here for. This is really the work that I want to do, right? And Life Remodeled actually is very intentionally not a religious organization. We work with people from all walks of life, and we come together collaboratively. But for me, my faith in Jesus is who and what drives me to do the work that I'm doing, right? And so to talk now about Life Remodeled, give everyone context, I always like to start with why Life Remodeled exists before I talk about what we do or how we do it. And the reason why we get out of bed to do the work that we do here in Detroit is because we're absolutely convinced Detroiters have all the talent they need, but many don't have access to all the opportunities they deserve.
Yeah.
And so what we do in response to this reality is we repurpose large vacant school buildings into one-stop hubs of opportunity for entire families to thrive. And then we fill these buildings with the best and brightest nonprofits who are moving the needle in three areas. And each of them are moving the needle in one of these three areas, either educational youth programs or health and wellness services or workforce development initiatives that lead to real, sustainable, livable wage jobs. And then we're not only putting these organizations all under one roof in a neighborhood that's experienced tremendous disinvestment and marginalization, but therefore we're making these services accessible, but we're helping these organizations collaborate to make far greater impact together than they would ever make alone.
Hey guys, just pausing this conversation with Chris to remind you to check out some of our incredible sponsors. Trent Bargy over at Elevate Real Estate wants to help you find your next home, whether that's a dream home, investment home, forever home. This is the time. Don't wait. Interest rates aren't going to get any better than they are right now. Talk to Trent today and he will set you up with everything you need. Speaking of needs, with spring right around the corner, now is the time to reach out to Five Star Home Services. For all of your HVAC needs, myfivestarhomeservices.com is where you need to go. HVAC, plumbing, electrical. What I love about this company is their profit on purpose mindset. They make profit for a purpose. They want to do the greater good. And I love being connected with them. They do all of my home maintenance, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So if you're looking for someone to help make sure that you're all set for the next season of your home life, go to myfivestarhomeservices.com. Now let's finish up this conversation with Chris. And I think that's probably the genesis for Next Level Nonprofit, which is underneath Life Remodeled. But it's kind of a what you're really trying to do, from the sense that I get, is that you're trying to level up the leader of every nonprofit so that we can work together. When did you see that there are a lot of people who are doing good in the world, but don't have the tools Like, how did you make that connection?
Well, I experienced it myself. So, you know, the first 4 years of our organization were very, very messy. And then over the next 9 years, we got our stuff together and we were able to invest $51 million into Detroit neighborhoods, renovate 4 school buildings, mobilize 82,000 volunteers, and beautify over 2,300 city blocks. And we since have become recognized as one of the best managed nonprofits in the region. And Charity, Navigator, and Candid have awarded us their highest possible ratings, right? And the way we did it was by creating this organizational operating system we call Next Level Nonprofit. But in the early days as a nonprofit founder or CEO, I achieved some epic fails. And, you know, what I mean by that are serious missteps that were the result of my ignorance, and it was my responsibility to know better. So, for instance, I hired people with yellow and even red flags that I would have seen had I actually known what to look for. And when it came to our existing team members, if they weren't already rock stars who could independently overcome their own challenges, I had no idea how to help them grow and develop, let alone thrive as a team. And when it came to our strategic plan, it may have looked good on paper, but it was not operationalized. And, you know, eventually we discovered how to attract, develop, and retain top talent, become a team of one, create a 2-page strategic plan that everyone in our entire organization is crystal clear and excited about where we're going and how we're going to get there. And I've made relationships with hundreds of nonprofits and hundreds of nonprofit leaders. And I began to realize that most of us are so focused on serving those outwardly that we're not investing enough time, talent, and energy on our inward internal systems, and which would actually ensure greater reach and greater impact. And as a result, we're not achieving the levels of impact we know we're capable of. So that is why I wrote the book, Next Level Nonprofit.
There's a lot of leaders who are listening right now, and they are hearing all the things that God has done through you and through Life Remodeled. And they're probably like I am, right? It's like take your breath away kind of numbers and amazing reach. One of the things I always like to ask high capacity leaders is, what are some of the disciplines that you subscribe to keep you in a healthy place?
Well, let me talk about that from an organizational perspective, because that has everything to do with my health as a leader, professionally and personally. And so there's really 4 main components that we see to organizational health and organizational excellence. And that would be 1, team unity; 2, compelling vision; 3, right strategy; and 4, discipline execution. And I'm going to focus on 1 just for a minute, because this, I believe, is the foundation of everything. Who is always greater than how? An organization having the right people in the right seats and truly becoming a team of one is the most important ingredient, because we can have the most compelling vision in the world and even the best strategy. But if we don't have the right people in the right seats and who are a team of one and united, we're going to be constantly beating our heads up against the wall. And this is what I'll say. You know, I have experienced all kinds of challenges as a nonprofit leader, including there were times when we were a week away from financial insolvency. I didn't know how we were going to pay people. I got real death threats that the FBI had to get involved in, you know, the work that I'm doing in Detroit neighborhoods. But yet those things that I just told you, when I compare them to the infighting, the politics, you know, the silos, some of the challenges we experience with people issues in our organization, those internal issues tormented my soul more than any other challenge I've ever faced. And I have come to learn this is the most important, most common challenge that every organizational leader faces. Are people challenges internally in the organization. And some of us have become so numb to these challenges that we're really not even realizing how much they're making us suffer. But I used to do a lot of stuff myself, kind of the founder syndrome, right? Where I didn't want to delegate and elevate. I didn't want to let go of my baby, this entrepreneurial venture. I thought that I could do it better, right, than others. And that meant that I ended up creating a big wake and burning through a lot of people. And I made a lot of mistakes as a leader. And it wasn't until I came to learn, if this vision is truly to be achieved that God's given us, the only way it's going to be done is through having the best people who are much smarter than me in their areas of expertise and us truly becoming a team of one. That is where the work gets very exponential. And that is where leaders can go the distance. I wouldn't be able to keep doing what I'm doing right now because we are taking on far more complex projects these days than we ever did before. And most people don't even think what we're doing is possible. We couldn't do it if we didn't have this incredible, remarkable team. And it took me a while to truly learn just how important that really is.
I can imagine right now that there's a leader who feels like they're really resonating with the idea that they have a little bit of that founder's syndrome. They're not delegating and elevating. If you were going to coach someone, if somebody was going to come into your planetarium office, which by the way is incredible, and sit down in front of you, what's the first step in saying, I need to trust my team more, I need to delegate and elevate? What's the first step in getting out of your own way?
Well, if I'm sitting down with somebody in this scenario you just painted, before I would tell them what I think they should do, and I try to not do that, right? I would ask them questions. I would ask, what are you best at in your organization professionally? What are the tasks or the responsibilities that you are absolutely the best at as you know, a leader? And which of those give you the most energy? Which of those do you enjoy most, right? And I listen to a leader describe these things. And then I ask them, what if you were able to spend almost all of your time doing just those things? And that opens up kind of a smirk or a smile or a look up to the left or whatnot. Ooh, wow. You know, and people think they begin to think not only how that would fulfill them, but more importantly, how that would bring exponential value to the people that they're serving, to the organization. Because there's a lot of us founders are highly resourceful people. We can learn almost anything, all right? We can do it. The question is not, can you do it? The question is this the best use of your time?
Yeah.
Because by doing all these other things, what that means is we're draining energy from the parts of us that would actually bring the most value to the world if we focus just on those things, right? And so I try to help leaders first and foremost think about their own gifts and abilities, right? And then once they get that connection, I help them think about, now what would that look like with all the roles and responsibilities in your organization if you had the best people in those roles and they were all specialized in knowing exactly where the organization's going, how they're going to get there, and what roles they play to achieve that, and they were able to stay focused in those areas. Because, look, too often in the nonprofit world or in the social sector, we are wearing many, many, many hats. And we operate under this, you know, zero-sum game mentality, or that the pie is limited and there's only a little bit of money out there, and we pay our team members scraps, right? And sometimes we pay ourselves scraps. And the reality is there's an exponential change when we shift that momentum to truly building an incredible team. And then we achieve outcomes that were never going to be achievable under our current constraints. And that is going to attract more donors, because what do donors want? Donors want impact.
Yeah.
And that is going to make you more excited about the work that you're doing, your team more excited. You know, the cyclical effects are just exponential on every level, right? And so, you know, what I want to say to someone listening right now who's like, oh my gosh, all right, I want to go get a dream team, is this is extremely hard work. It takes years. You don't build your dream team overnight. And all those four components that I just mentioned, imagine that they're like a flywheel on a car or even just a wheel on a car, right? And the faster you turn that wheel on the car, the faster the car goes. The same thing is true with your organization. Every time you improve your team unity, your compelling vision, your right strategy, your discipline execution, your organization is going to go to the next level and the next level after that. Every time you go to the next level, you have more ability to attract even better talent. Mm. You're not wherever we are today, we have a cap on what level of talent we're even capable of attracting. And we have to just face that reality. And that has a lot to do with what our capacity is as a leader right now.
Sure.
I am a much better leader today than I was a month ago. And I'm way better than I was a year ago. And a lot of that has come by, operating in where I am the best, growing in those areas rather than becoming so stressed out by trying to do things that are truly outside the giftings God's given me.
One of the phrases that we used in the Army all the time was this term mission creep. And that's where, we have a singular focus and then all of a sudden you start doing this and start doing that. I think most leaders don't wake up saying, man, I want to put on a different hat today, but it feels like there's this mission creep. What do you do personally to stay in your zone of genius or your area of expertise?
Well, creating a strategic plan that is simple. I say we get it down to two pages and something that everyone on the entire team believes in. And then we set goals, a 10-year goal, 3-year goals, 1-year goals, and then every 90 days, quarterly priorities. So we establish those as an entire team, myself included. And by me committing to that strategic plan, and being able to operationalize it all the way down to every 90 days, what are the most important things that I need to accomplish this 90 days in order for us to be on track to achieve what we call our 10-year moonshot? That keeps me laser focused.
Yeah.
And obviously I'm doing other things than those 3 to 7 quarterly priorities, but those are what I prioritize over everything else. And having that vision in front of us, in front of me and our team constantly, we're all accountable to it. We all keep each other motivated and accountable because it's not just me that buys into it. It's not just half of our team that's committed to it. It's literally everybody. And so we're holding each other accountable. We all know exactly what we're committing to. And so we also know wherever the ball gets dropped,
right?
You see right away who dropped the ball. And that's not because we want to throw anybody under the bus. It's because we care about the people we serve so much that we want to be accountable. And so I'm accountable, right? I submit myself to that level of accountability throughout the entire organization. And it's healthy. It's motivating. It's inspiring. And but again, I'm always driven by that why. Mm. Whenever I start to lose steam, in fact, every 90 days, we recast vision to our entire team and myself included. Why are we doing this, right? Why are we tackling this incredibly difficult battle? Innovating, finding new solutions. We're hitting our heads against the wall, but there's got to be a way. Why do we keep doing that? Because the people we serve deserve the highest level of excellence we can possibly give them, because Detroiters have all the talent they need, but many don't have access to all the opportunities they deserve. So we are going to make sure they've got access to opportunity, right? Those are key disciplines.
Woo. Come on, Chris, you get me fired up. I'm about to run through a wall. Let's go. I love it. Okay. I have one more question for you. But before I ask it, I know that my podcast family is going to want to connect with you and Next Level Leadership or Next Level Nonprofit and all the places. Where's the best place to learn about what God is doing in and through the work that that you're doing in Detroit and now all over the U.S.
So this book, Next Level Nonprofit, it's on Amazon. It'll be at your house in 2 days, you know, if you order it. And it's also on audiobook. Anywhere you can buy an audiobook, it's on pretty much every channel out there. We also have a website, nlncoaching.org. And this type of coaching that we do, if our listeners are familiar with some of the for-profit models out there like EOS or Pinnacle or Scaling Up, this type of coaching typically costs $50,000 to $80,000 a year. And we're doing it for $20,000 a year because we want to make it accessible and we believe so strongly in it. So right now we are working to scale this organizational operating system across the country and truly revolutionize the nonprofit sector. Because again, the more organizations that implement this, you're going to serve more people and you're going to serve them far more effectively. And you're going to have a whole lot more fun doing it.
I love it. And of course, we'll link to that, all of that in the show notes. Last question I love to ask people. It's an advice question. I'm going to ask you to go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, except I get to name the season of life that you're in. Right. Okay. And so I want to take you back to your very first day as the full-time CEO of Life Remodeled, right back in 2010. If you could go back in time and pull up a chair in front of that younger version of yourself, sit knee to knee with him, hold his hands, look him in the eyes, what's the one thing that you're going to give him advice on the journey he's about to endeavor?
Well, what I'm going to say is very much in line with a lot of what we've been talking about, because it was the most important thing that I needed to learn that I did not learn for about 4 or 5 years. And I would look myself in the eye and I would say, I'm very proud of who you are and what you've done. You got a lot of gifts. You got a lot of grit. You got a lot of passion, a lot of talent. However, you are not going to achieve this vision unless you learn how to build a team of people much smarter than you, much higher capacity than you in the specific areas that the organization needs. You need to discover what roles this organization truly needs, and you need to discover how to attract, develop, and retain the best team and become a team of one. And then I would teach myself how to do that, right? Because if I would have told myself that, I would have been like, okay, I believe you, right? But I don't know how to do it. I have no idea. No one taught me, right? So, man, I wish I could have saved myself a lot of headache and a lot of heartache.
That's so good. That's so good. Chris, I'm so thankful for the work that you're doing for nonprofits, for Detroit, and I really deeply appreciate your generosity and the time that you gave here today. I know that our mutual friend Casey set us up, and this was kind of one of those flyer, like, hey, you should just talk to this guy, and I'm very, very grateful to you, Casey, and to you, Chris, for the opportunity to connect.
Yeah, thank you, Casey. And back at you, man. Tony, I'm really looking forward to getting to know you more based on what we talked about before we hopped on this podcast. So I love what you're doing, brother.
What a great conversation with Chris. I'm so thankful for his heart, for the way that he works in Detroit and what God is calling him to do. One of the things I appreciate is his perspective on team unity. It was such a gift. Do me a favor, go follow him, pick up a copy of his book, let him know that you heard him here on the podcast. That always goes a long way to share about what God is doing. As always, friends, I'm super thankful for you for the opportunity to connect. If you need anything from me, I'm easy to find at TW Milt on Instagram, website, Follow the Lead Coaching. You can also now go to followtheleadpodcast.com. So many ways. Thanks for being a part of this community. Thanks for being you. And remember, if you want to follow Jesus, you must be willing to move.